Hey, how you doing? It's Dave Corlett here, the business director at the creative agency ShapeBy, and a huge warm welcome to our podcast, The Changemakers. Now, we've had a bit of a hiatus over the last few weeks and months. It's for good reason. We've been working really hard on what I guess is essentially The Changemakers 2.0. So for a long time, we've run this podcast in quite a generic format, I guess you'd say. We've had one guest, we've talked fairly chronologically about their life and times, how they got to where they are today, moved on to a really specific topic, and then rounded it off with a question that we ask all of our guests, which is great. You know, it's a format that worked really well. I'm really proud of the conversations that we had with all of our guests, but I guess we thought after 2 years it was time to freshen things up a little bit. So from now on, what can you expect? You can expect all of the podcasts to be available on video, first of all, on our YouTube channel. So do look out for that. There'll be a link in the blurb for this podcast. You can also expect a bit of a mix-up in the format, like this one that we've got for you today, which has three guests. So lots going on. Really, really exciting news for the podcast in 2024. So on to episode number 42 of The Changemakers. And this one is looking at the role that brand, and specifically design within that brand journey, has in driving forward fintech companies. Now, fintech's a super interesting area for us. We've looked at it extensively through working with fintech companies and also more traditional finance institutions over the years. Our founder, Nick Farrer, is the third guest on this Repart podcast, and he's kind of seen it all really when it comes to that. So do listen out for his perspective and his viewpoints on it. But I guess another reason for looking at it really is that if you cast your mind back even just a few years ago, fintech was kind of seen as maybe a bit of an underdog, a challenger industry or sector, if you like, to, I suppose, the big guns of the financial services industry. But now I would argue that that has changed, and actually fintech is more mainstream than ever. You look at brands like Revolut, Monzo, Stripe, of whom we've got the wonderful Michael Jeter on this podcast. And I would argue Ramp as well to a certain extent. I know they're a bit more startup-y, I suppose, but the strides that they've taken into the corporate spend world really have made it a mainstream category, I suppose, as much as anybody. It's got three wonderful guests for you, the first of whom is Aaron Robbs, creative director at Ramp. We've got Michael Jeter, executive creative director at Stripe, and lastly, as I mentioned, our founder, managing director Nick Farrer. So a wonderful lineup and some really illuminating conversation around the role that design and brand plays in the world of fintech. First up, this is Aaron Robbs. Now, Aaron and I don't know each other too well, I'll be honest, although I've been an admirer of his work many, many years. Ramp first came into my viewfinder, I suppose, a couple of years ago when we had their VP of marketing, Ashley Steppy, on the podcast, one of our first guests, actually. I've been following their journey ever since, and what a journey it's been. So I'm really excited to find out the role that brand plays in driving forward that, and particularly from Aaron's point of view, how he runs that creative team to make sure that everything is on point and delivered to the hugely impressive standards that they've set. So here we go. This is Aaron Robbs in the first part of the Changemakers podcast, episode 42. Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for joining me on the Changemakers podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, good, good. Listen, I just mentioned to you before that I've been such a big admirer of the Ramp visual identity. One of our first guests on the podcast going back 2 years ago now was Ashley Steppy, and your VP of marketing at the time. And one of the big reasons I wanted to talk to her was because I was just so in love with that Ramp brand. So I'm so excited to have a chat with you today. And I guess let's just dive into it. So, you know, as I said, I feel like, and my team completely agrees with me on this, by the way, we had this conversation in the studio just now, that the Ramp visual identity, it's just so well considered. And I'd really love to get an insight into, you know, the design principles of the brand and how they guide you and your team on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, definitely happy to talk a bit about that. You know, if I can kind of zoom out quickly and sort of think about like past teams I've been a part of, you know, I think about design principles for some of those teams, like aim higher or sweat the detail, some of these that, you know, in my mind always sort of kind of read to me as being a little empty or sort of vapid in some ways, just like something that, you know, the team leader had to do. So I think in some ways I don't have principles sort of codified in that way, but I do have some things that sort of guide me in the way I sort of think about how I lead the team. I would say first off is just really thinking about hiring great people with low ego, people that are kind, people that are also really ambitious and competitive and want to do their best work. I sort of find that type of person sort of brings along a lot of those things that, you know, would be table stakes for me, you know, sweating the details, sort of like focus on craft, to sort of trying to challenge the status quo and sort of do something really different. So for me, it all starts with hiring a really amazing team and sort of giving them autonomy to kind of push things forward. I would say for me personally, because Ramp is almost a different company every 6 months in some ways, we're just moving so fast and we're growing so quickly. When I joined in 2021, we were right at 100 people. Now I think we're close to 600. So you can imagine like our product suite is sort of growing and expanding. We're getting sharper on kind of where it is and what we want to specifically focus on. So that sort of requires the brand to be pretty flexible. So I try to just sort of zoom out to just first principles. And, you know, probably for 10 years or so, 12 years, when I first read the Vignelli canon, I was struck by sort of like how simple his sort of like guiding tenets were for him. And it was just three words, like semantics, syntactics, and pragmatics. And semantics is really just searching for the meaning in whatever project we're working on. So for me, it's just like keeping your audience in mind, really understanding the category, understanding what you're working towards, what you're trying to solve, and doing a lot of that research in the beginning. Syntactics, creating an order around that meeting. So these systems you create, the libraries of images you make, all these things, you know, sort of ladder up into that meaning. So I think within that, you know, I've got pretty standard sort of things I'm looking for. You know, is this visually appealing? Is there a clear visual hierarchy? Is the type skill great? Is this as simple as we can make it? Is it clear, right, for example? And then lastly, just pragmatics. Does the output make sense? Is this understood by the people that are looking at it? So, you know, I really try to ensure that we're not navel-gazy. We're not designers designing for designers, that, you know, we're always sort of putting our audience in mind.
How big is your team there? You mentioned about hiring people, hiring the right people.
Totally, totally. I think there are 9 people on sort of the core brand design team. And then our sister teams like brand and design ops. That's a team of 5 producers. So I've kind of divided the team up into a couple of segments. One is the design systems team. They really focus on everything I would classify as like graphic design, those type systems, the system that informs our website, I think through motion guidelines, so on and so forth, events, spatial design, that type of thing. That team focused on art and image, so photography, a lot of animation happens on that team, illustration, video work for customer stories, anything that would sort of, I think, complement this sort of more rigid systems-based work. This is more like the expressive side of what we're doing. So then also writing, and until recently strategy was report brand strategy was pretty into my org. The design ops team is just our incredible and kind of closest partners in the company. They're responsible for process, how work gets done. They're sort of an interface between our team and sort of the rest of the company. So helping us prioritize against, you know, company priorities and making sure that we're focusing on the right work to be done. I think one thing I think a lot about is every company is different. So every brand team needs to adapt and sort of be different for the company they're in. And I think often we talk about brands or brand teams in the context of a rebrand. That's usually when a lot of this topic comes up. And this is a moment in time where a company's sort of like done the most drastic thing they could do, which is a complete visual, strategic, verbal overhaul of their company. That's pretty drastic, I think. And you know, most companies only need to do this when something, when the brand team has really fallen behind, or it doesn't really match the promise of the product, or it's just, you know, they're about to IPO or something. But I think this is really unnecessary if the brand team is really in lockstep with the company. So if I'm thinking about Ramp and what's important at Ramp, it's velocity over everything. I think that's the key to us growing as quickly as we have. Finding product market fit as quickly as we have is just sort of like this deep seated sort of aspect to the company. So, you know, we try to not spend much time planning. We try to be doing more than we're planning. It's low process, high output. And if I think about it that way, I would be really cautious for a young company that's still growing so quickly to try to like implement a brand that's super rigid, full of rules and just fully formed, you know, so we try to keep it really flexible. just so it's open to evolution, so we can sort of like work at the same pace as like the product teams where they're evolving quickly. I think we want to evolve quickly as well. So I think a lot of what I focused on in the beginning is really trying to create these design systems that can support that speed, whether it's for growth teams to do a lot of experimentation and ensure that works consistent with a lot of like the core marketing and product pages, to create like image libraries that feel bespoke, but they can help teams like the sales team do their work more consistently with what we're doing much more quickly. And then just generally trusting our team, and, you know, right, we hire great talent, and I think we all have a pretty good understanding of the brand at this point. So if you know enough to go for it, you know, we're not trying to slow the process down too much. So it's a little like ambiguous and hard to pin down, but, you know, I think it requires us to be really like tightly aligned and specifically aligned with the pace of the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, from the outside looking in, you can see that kind of flexibility in things like the brand campaign that you launched fairly recently, that simplicity and that flexibility play out in the real world over there. So hats off to you for that. I just want to come back to you on something that you said a little bit earlier about the types of people that you hire, people who kind of maybe have that worldview of looking to do things a little bit differently. It's interesting with companies like Ramp, because you are kind of coming up with like a challenge to kind of more traditional finance companies. I just wondered from a brand point of view, where are the kind of opportunities to be different and disruptive as a brand within a space like yours? And on the flip side of that, are there certain areas, touch points, channels where you maybe have to maybe just toe the line a little bit more and rein it in a touch?
Yeah, totally. You know, one thing we talk a lot about is, you know, how our brand or brand voice should exist along like a really wide spectrum. And we should think about how and where we sort of express along that spectrum. I think on one far end, you would have something like an advertising campaign or an out-of-home campaign, like you just mentioned. I think that's a place where we want to be the most expressive, the most sort of like provocative, or the most clear. I think there are a lot of different ways or you might want to express in those areas. But I would say that like on that far end is where we're probably going to be take the most risks or sort of try to stand out the most. All the way, I think, to like the writing within the product, which, you know, we touch a little bit, not too much. But I think in that place, you know, you're really trying to help the customer along their journey to get out of the way, to be clear and understanding. So there, you know, I think like in between, there's a lot of places where you need to have a point of view or the way you want to show up. That's kind of how I think about it a little bit. But really for me, you know, there's this sort of tension or sort of challenge to balance being surprising or sort of challenging the status quo with building credibility in this space. I think like startups and the finance space are up against, you know, companies like Amex or, you know, a lot of well-established companies like Bill.com or Concur, for example. I think we have the opportunity to come in, combine some of those things and do it in a way that is unexpected, but also like familiar. Maybe if, like, I really love this idea of like, where do you toe the line? Where do you become a challenger? And I think it's, as I was thinking about this question just now, just the idea of style versus personality kind of came to mind. And this idea of toeing the line, like, you know, where do we follow rules? Where do we sort of feel familiar, or where are we playing it safe? And I sort of think about that as sort of style decisions in some way. So, you know, what are the decisions we're making that are kind of timeless, that are going to resonate with our audience, but also hopefully resonate with them as being aspirational? So these are decisions, I think there are millions of them, but that kind of add up to being great. And they're usually like invisible to the customer as well. So talking about a great type scale or the way things move when they animate, or just having like unexpectedly great photography for a fintech company. I think that those are kind of areas where, like, you know, these are like small decisions that just sort of add up to something bigger that is really about style. I almost think about these like building a wardrobe or something. Like, you don't want to have like a bunch of like pieces in your wardrobe that are very different from each other, because it's hard to mix and match. You want to like stay to a closer color palette, or sort of find timeless pieces that sort of will always sort of be in style. So it's kind of how I think about like, where do we toe the line? It's like, what decisions can we make that we know are going to be consistent and sort of hold things together, versus being out in the world in these brand campaigns. I think those are areas where we want our personality to come through. So thinking about like, if you're at a party or something and you're talking to people, you don't want to go in and show up and tell your life story or just be like incredibly long-winded. You have to think about like how you're going to show up and say something interesting or sort of stand out or be memorable. And I think these are places where we're thinking about our customer, and specifically in the finance space. You know, I think there's a lot of feeling from teams, oh these are accountants or these are CFOs or controllers. They're very straightforward. They're this way. But I think at the end of the day, they're people who laugh and watch comedy. They go out to eat with their friends and have great conversations. They read books. They watch movies. And so those are areas where I think like we really want to pull from culture and tap into culture and reflect it back in a surprising and interesting way. But I think we don't want to do that at every step along the journey. It's being really strategic in how and where we show up and how we present.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting because there's this tendency within kind of financial services and finance in general to think of it as the staid old traditional finance companies versus what you might call a new breed of fintech firms. But obviously, as we know, it's a lot more nuanced than that. You can look at it as broadly as it's just classic marketing branding, really. Ultimately, you have to appeal to people. You have to appeal to their emotions. That's not going to change. I've touched on your brand campaign already as a great example of that, just because kind of it really sticks in the mind. We published our most recent agency newsletter all about brand campaigns, and yours was an example that we held up, of one that we really, really admired for its power and its simplicity. And actually, I just wanted to dive into that brand campaign because over the last 12 months or so, it's been quite tricky, as far as I understand it, for lots of brand marketers and brand leaders to get sign-off for brand campaigns, because when times are tough, you look towards more short-term tactics like performance marketing to drive results. Mm-hmm. You launched this brand campaign, you got it signed off. To what extent was it challenging to build the business case for that campaign internally for you guys?
I think it wasn't hard because... Our CEO and our strategic finance teams really see, the value and doing that type of work, building brand awareness and, your marked budget to kind of allocate towards doing that. I report to the CEO. He oversees all of marketing and he's really a great collaborator and super interested in this work. For me, I think performance versus brand marketing, it shouldn't be an either or thing. At some point, when you reach a certain point of scale, it needs to be both. I think it's like a strategic choice on when that happens and when it's right for your company. But for us, this is the right time to kind of invest in it. So I think about like performance marketing. I think companies that are like early on and they're trying to find product market fit, it's much more economical than doing broader brand awareness, which is notoriously hard to measure. There's a long tail there. It takes a long time to sort of see those results. But I think there are advantages to doing that early, is where you can reach customers quickly because it's so hyper-targeted. You can have a high degree of certainty that, your message is getting through. You can track the effectiveness of the work. You can experiment, get feedback, and optimize quickly. I think those are all like amazing things when you're trying to show ROI on the money you're spending. Once you kind of get known and you need to go out and grow, I think that's where you have to think about this work as sort of an art and a science. And when you're developing a brand, I always think back to Marty Neumeier and the brand gap. Brand isn't what you say it is, it's what they say it is. You can really shape perception and influence how people think about your company, but at the end of the day, you don't have total control over that narrative. So you have to kind of build that relationship and that personality over time. So for me, that's in everything we do and every decision we make, we're really trying to differentiate within our category to surprise customers, whether that's from product perspective and the way that we're eliminating receipts, basically, from expense reporting. Like, there are so many things that are like radically different about what we're doing as a company. And my end goal is to make sure that like the brand work is really reflecting that high caliber of the product work and always keep customer in mind at the end of the day. Where can we find opportunities to inject a sense of humor, or be kind of aspirational through like design decisions, or just being incredibly concise if we're just trying to land a specific idea? I think it's really fun. It's a place where the team you hire and their sense of humor or sensibilities really like come into play big time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great place to end. I think it comes through from the outside looking in. And I think that's an incredible testament to you and your team. And long may it continue. I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Changemakers today. Really, really do appreciate it. And thank you for giving us the inside story into the Ramp brand.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dave. It was awesome to be here. Thank you so much.
So there we have it. Aaron Robs from Ramp. Tremendous guy, lovely guy, and such a talented leader and creative. What Ramp is doing is nothing short of remarkable, to be honest with you, in terms of their brand identity and where they're taking the brand. And what I really loved in particular about chatting with Aaron was the conversation about that tension between, I suppose, what people expect of you, where to toe the line, and where you can take a few more risks and be a bit more inventive. And I think we see that play out a lot in fintech around customer experiences. As Aaron mentioned, there are hundreds, thousands even maybe, of, you know, individual touch points, a lot of them to customers that are quite invisible, you know, little nuances, little flourishes here and there. But actually, when you make a conscious effort to impact as many of those as possible with a fluid design system that has those kind of unexpected moments of delight in it, I would argue that actually that does add up to a differentiated experience that can really be owned by you and also can be distinct when it comes to that dichotomy, I suppose, between fintech, digitally native, very forward-thinking, you know, technology businesses that operate in finance effectively, as opposed to some of the slightly more staid, traditional financial institutions that are rushing to catch up. I bank with someone who you might argue is a little bit more traditional, and I'm actually starting to see some of those experiences come in within their app and within their customer experiences as well, especially in the digital realm. So, you know, it's quite obvious that it is becoming a little bit more mainstream now in terms of being thinking and acting like that from a creative point of view. And if you get a chance, do go and check out Ramp's work. Follow Aaron and his team on LinkedIn. They're always posting about the amazing stuff that they're doing. I would definitely urge you guys to do that. So on to our second guest. This is the wonderful Michael Jeter from Stripe. Now, fans of the podcast, you might recognise Michael's name from a previous episode where we talked at length about his time at Zapier, and in particular, how he led a rebrand that was going swimmingly. Everything was going great up until the 11th hour, and all of a sudden, it wasn't. It was something completely outside of Michael and his team's control, but ultimately, it completely derailed the project and start again from scratch. So I've probably given you a few too many details already, but I won't give you any more. I would urge you to go back and listen to that episode if you can. Michael is now the Executive Creative Director at Stripe, running the creative team there, and you know, I would definitely argue that Stripe is a mainstream financial services brand now. You know, they are pretty ubiquitous everywhere around the globe. In essence, the brand has not been struggling, but it has had to keep pace. It's had to keep up with that tremendous growth. And Michael and his team are a huge part of that from a creative and a design point of view. So it's a really good time actually to be talking with Michael as he goes into it. It's quite a pivotal moment for Stripe in terms of, you know, embedding design throughout this huge and ever-growing business. We get into a lot of that. We also get into his ideas around craft, beauty, culture. So yeah, here we go. This is Michael Jeter in the second part of this episode on fintech brands. Really excited to bring this to you.
Hey, Mr. Jeter, welcome to the Changemakers. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Dave. Thanks for having me here.
Awesome. Well, it's the second time around. When you were at Zapier, you're back. I really appreciate your time once again. Listen, let's just dive straight into this because this is such an interesting topic. Talk to me, first of all, about craft, beauty, and culture. How does focusing on those things help you to elevate the Stripe brand above your competitors?
Yeah, it's an interesting ask here at Stripe that, you know, of course, of designers, we believe that the more beautiful and well-crafted design is, the higher quality it is, and that people feel that and believe that. And I'm really fortunate for that to be something that's believed from the top at Stripe. Patrick and John speak about it a lot at the company and how important that is. And it's kind of like, if it's so well taken care of from the design position, obviously it's going to be that well taken care of all the way through to the product and the code. And that's a really wonderful kind of ask to have as we move forward. So it's can be tricky where that level, that bar of creative, you know, has to be met for us to be able to ship something. But holding ourselves to that level has been a really interesting thing to adjust to and a challenge to reach from a brand perspective.
That leadership point is really interesting. The conversations that we have on this podcast and elsewhere time and time again, you know, companies seem to fall into two camps. Either the leadership get it or leadership don't. But in finance or in fintech, do you think that that is something fairly unique? Or do you think actually it's something that is becoming more prevalent as people realize that, you know, especially within kind of crowded markets like financial services, design is one of the main things that helps brands to stand out and be distinct and craft that unique place in the market?
Yeah, I think there's two levels that I've been thinking about it. There's the crowded market level, which every tech company goes through, right? Where they have a great product and they start and they go, well, we don't need marketing. We don't need brands. We just have a great product. I think just that's ubiquitous across tech. And as more and more companies kind of compete, the only thing that really separates in a lot of ways is brand. Obviously, the quality of the product is, I do say so myself, much better than all the other competitors, Stripe. But you know, to get people to even understand that and to get the product, it takes that brand quality to get folks in. I think what's interesting in the fintech way of thinking about brand, or at least design, that I've been thinking about a lot is that money has always relied on kind of technological advancements in design to show its value, right? You look at a dollar bill or currency, paper currency, any time throughout history, like the artistry is phenomenal, right? The craft is phenomenal. The technology to keep people from copying the bills and using counterfeit and stuff like that has always been pushing forward in the kind of technological sense. So there's this interesting idea where money has this emotional value for folks, right? It's not real. We made up this concept of money, right? It's this thing that we all agree about. So from a perspective of value and believing in its value, the beauty of currency has always been really, really important. And so it's interesting when that moves into a digital sense, when you don't touch the dollar bills or the currency as much anymore, how does that value kind of translate in the way that you're using or thinking about money and the value of money? And so I think there's a steep tradition in history and kind of the quality and craft when it comes to finance.
There is. But I suppose, you know, you just made a really interesting point there. Money is now effectively invisible. That's the whole point of this technology. They make the transaction so seamless that the actual concept of a physical dollar bill or coin or whatever it may be is kind of long gone. As a design team, how are you grappling with the same challenge of how to build a brand around an invisible transaction or an invisible product? How do you guys reconcile that with building something distinct that can only be Stripe? Is that a challenge for you guys?
Yeah, it's a challenge both, I think, in the finance and the fintech world, but also I think for any tool. I had the same issue to deal with at Zapier as well. Any tool that is kind of this supporting behind the scenes type of thing where a company starts and then they need these different pieces and parts to be a successful company, they kind of plug them in. So I think that it's a similar challenge on both sides of just being like, how does a company kind of step forward and talk about their brand and what they believe when they're just such a supporting player, right? Like if it weren't for our users that were so doing interesting things, building interesting companies, Stripe would be, or any company that is a supporting player would be nothing. So then you kind of get into that world of, okay, how do you talk about your customers and users in interesting ways without taking any credit for their success, but also being this kind of supporting behind the scenes kind of player that's like pushing for their success and trying to build tools that support or reduce the friction for their success. And so I think those are kind of the ingredients that you start to kind of create a unique brand and storytelling of like, why do you exist? What value do you bring? And then how do you do that in a way that's like, that's appreciated and supported, but also not kind of taking credit and not being braggadocious at the same time. It's a unique challenge.
Yeah, it certainly is. And the other thing, you know, we spoke a little bit before this about the craft and beauty. Is that kind of, does the emphasis on that come from you as a design leader to say, well, I believe that brands need to have that inherent beauty to be pleasant and engaging to interact with? Or is that kind of more driven from Stripe's perspective as a brand? We want this, you know, the experience of interacting with this brand to be beautiful. Is it kind of like a combination of the two?
Yeah, it's a combination. It comes from the top in a lot of ways. I think the DNA of any company when it started really early, like kind of the early things, the early wins, the things that you kind of really understand, push and propel your company forward, start to cement how you view things. So really early on, Stripe was known for making and pushing kind of, you know, really interesting, well-designed, kind of highly technical websites and landing pages, and was known for that beauty. And as that beauty started to kind of create buzz on social media or just in, you know, different parts of the industry, that value was kind of seen over time. And so being a brand that values that beauty and is seen as someone who cares and takes care for that level of beauty is something that's been seen to be valuable for the company and for the users to kind of understand, like, we care about quality through in and throughout. So that beauty is more of like a signal of like, if you can put the effort into making something so beautiful, then you can also put the effort into everything else. And I think it's a signal of strength in a lot of ways from a brand perspective.
When Stripe came along, you guys were definitely seen as a real challenger to some very established and traditional financial institutions. Was it kind of a pushback against that and that kind of slightly staid industry, or again, was it just kind of how Stripe wanted to do things?
I think it was very much the way that Stripe wanted to do things. The folks that first joined the company and what they cared about. There was this interesting kind of groundswell of hiring really thoughtful designers super early on. There's always been a tradition at Stripe with really thoughtful, really high-end designers. And they were attracted to Stripe for whatever reason. And that kind of continues to kind of evolve from the ground up.
And it's attracted you as well. So there must be something right.
It has, yes. I've always, I think in the design industry, at least in tech specifically, Stripe has always been one of those companies that you knew you wanted to be a designer there because they truly cared. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And then another thing we've kind of touched on in chatting about this episode was a goal of yours to infuse technology into the brand a little bit more. Can you just kind of elaborate, I suppose, on what kind of tech we're talking about and what will doing this help you to accelerate or achieve?
Yeah, the connective tissue between what we talked about with craft and beauty and kind of getting technology is that third piece of culture that we didn't quite talk about yet. And it's this idea of like, what is the culture of money? What is the culture of tech? What is like, what do people care about? What do they talk about? How do they kind of communicate about the topics? And there's some interesting perspectives, at least in fintech, about how technology has disrupted or made it much easier to connect with money, right? Like Stripe has just famously always been like 7 lines of code. You want to start a business, it's that easy, just plop it in. And that level of technology is core to the brand, right? Like if we weren't so technologically advanced, we wouldn't be so beloved as a product. And as a designer, I think, you know, been in this industry for a while in tech, we've always as designers been trying to push the design perspective and ethos on tech. You know, without designers, the websites would look terrible. The brands would look terrible, right? It's just good enough was kind of the ethos super early on. And as we were kind of brought in, we're like, okay, this is the way you think about it. This is design thinking. This is what beauty matters. This is what craft matters. Now I think that's been really well established. I think it's a nice homogenous kind of point of view throughout tech. What I'm interested in now for us is now that I work at a place that's so technologically advanced is how can technology then kind of give back into the design industry and building a brand? How can we start building kind of tools that allow for kind of iterative approaches to storytelling or to the brand? Or how can we start building kind of like to scale, right? Like how can we use technology in different ways to allow and empower every person at Stripe to have the power of design so that we can kind of scale a place that where my team, which is pretty small, isn't kind of a bottleneck. So there's this kind of level by which I think we can create something new and interesting and always engaging and always evolving in a way that we're using technology to push that forward in a way that I think it's hard for just a group of designers to always be doing. And so where is that kind of connection and kind of collaboration, not just in AI, but kind of in thinking about kind of like iterative or generative kind of pieces of art that are kind of interesting, especially as we think about the concepts of data and kind of obviously like money and the economy and all these things have these really interesting, huge stories. When you take all the different players and the different numbers and the math connected, there's some interesting fodder in there to, I think, make some beautiful stories that are brand forward that are really only brought about technological advancements.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've been speaking to a few in-house creative leaders who are really pushing to build these tools that, again, allow for this kind of maybe slightly more self-serve model where anybody in the business can use this to templates, really easy to use, kind of almost dummy's guide to design. But I'm interested because obviously you guys are designers, you know how to kind of get the best out of these tools. For folks who are maybe kind of non-design orientated within the business, do you have any reservations or any way to mitigate the fact that they might not necessarily be able to get the best out of these tools?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think anything that you have to do, I think it's like building any tool. My ideal of moving this forward, of any tool that you have to then train a bunch or kind of tell people what's right or right, what's wrong, you're building the wrong tool. It's kind of the idea of the iPad and giving it to a toddler and they already know how to swipe and use it. Like that's obviously the kind of the height of any product. So my ideal is to be able to build these self-serve tools in that way where it's allows them to be creative. Any person that doesn't deem themselves to be creative to try and play and push And they might create things that we would never do, but it's still on brand and still interesting, and they can feel kind of connected to it. That's the goal. Now, obviously, that's very hard. Like, the more kind of controls you do on that, the less is possible. So like, the more you kind of really hold the reins so that it doesn't break ever. And then the more you give, the more iteration and the more kind of evolution can happen. But then you can also have some weird outcomes that you kind of need to account for. So it's something I'm trying to figure out right now. We haven't really cracked it. But looking forward to the next year, I'm really interested in how to do that. Because again, culturally at Stripe, everyone does care about design and craft and has opinions about it. Writing, especially the beauty of words and the meaning, the kind of value of words here are really, really important, especially in design. So how do we kind of build a place where everyone who has a high quality bar here, how can they use that to even push on their own? Like, they might teach us more than us teaching them, honestly, in a lot of ways. It's I think some of the best ideas come from people who are not even trying to have great ideas in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose, you know, it's an iterative process as well, isn't it? It could be a bit of a sticky start, you know, while people get used to the fact that they're using tools that maybe they haven't used before. But then, as you say, if you're holding the reins a little bit tightly at first, you maybe can start to loosen them as people get more used to them and understand a little bit more about design philosophies at a basic level, and also just how to use the tools as well. That's pretty exciting. How far have you got so far?
We're still building out the systems to kind of allow for that right now. That's something that I've, over the last 11 months that I've been here, is kind of working with a team to kind of look at all of the different needs. So we're still ingesting and understanding what people need and how they need to use them, and then kind of figure out the tools, talking to the right partners. So I think, you know, next year you'll see us talking a lot more about that. But what I've been inspired by is that everyone does use design tools now. Like, everyone uses Google Slides to tell stories, right? They're all pulling to get building together. If they're pulling from other slides to put together, or different pieces and parts using templates or whatever. So it's interesting. I think everyone's already pretty much to some level using design to tell stories across all of their work. And so it's interesting to see, if you give them even better tools, I think you can quickly raise that bar pretty easily.
Definitely. I'm always in awe of younger generations as well, who have brought up very visual media like TikTok and the ability to stitch videos together. I mean, when I was at college, we were using editing software that needed a whole room just to house it, you know, and it was kind of a whole semester or a whole year to just to be taught how to use it. And now people use those things really iteratively. So I suppose it's part of our culture as well, really using certain tools. And even, dare I say it, things like Canva as well, and making it really easy for non-designers to kind of do design work. Yeah, that's really interesting. Maybe if we have you back for a third time, which I'd love to do, we can do a full episode on self-serve tools and how that's going for you guys. That'd be awesome.
That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Michael. Thanks again. Yeah. I really, really appreciate you coming back on the Changemakers and talking to me about Stripe's design gym. Sounds really, really cool.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Michael Jeter there, what a guy, what an inspiration, and what a beard. You'll have to go to the video and check that out to see that, but trust me, he is putting my beard game to shame big time. But on a serious note, what I really love about these conversations are the themes that start cropping up. And, you know, one of the big themes that was talked about in Aaron's piece, and also Michael's there as well, is really this idea of craft and beauty, and how putting care and attention into the customer experience, every single touch point, these unexpected moments of delight and beauty that infuse the experience, what they really say about you as a business and how much care and attention that you're likely to give the customer. Because it's true, you know, when you create a brand experience that's delightful, you're not doing it for yourself, you're not doing it for the designers in your team, you're doing it for the customer. And what that really says is that if we care this much about our brand and the experience that you have with our brand, then how likely is it that we care about you and taking care of you and taking care of your money? It's very likely. So I would argue that that's something to think about with brands both inside fintech and financial services, and also outside as well, because it makes so much sense. So I really thank Michael for his time there. Moving on now to part three. My guest is someone that I have a little bit more familiarity with than the other two, even though I've met Michael a couple of times now. For obvious reasons, this is our founder and managing director, Nick Farrow. I really wanted to get Nick on this episode because he's been running this agency for 18 years now, over 18 years, and he's been involved in the marketing branding industry for over two decades. He's kind of seen it all when it comes to financial services, fintech, and everything in between, really. And especially, as I mentioned at the start, the growth of fintech from underdog niche challenger to where it is today, which is kind of verging on mainstream, if not mainstream already. So I really wanted to get Nick's take on how fintech companies can elevate their brand through design in his view, who's nailing it from a brand point of view within fintech, and also kind of looking at some other areas that design can benefit fintech companies, maybe within the scope of brand, but kind of arching into things like product and things like that. So yeah, really, really happy to have Nick on the podcast. And here are his views on all of that. Hey, Nick, how you doing? Welcome to the Changemakers.
Hello, Dave. I'm very, very well. And yourself?
Yeah, good. And looking forward to this conversation as well. I know that, you know, over 18 years of running this agency, you've worked with brands of all different shapes and sizes, many of them in finance, from kind of more, I suppose you'd call them more traditional financial institutions and organizations through to fintech brands. So from your point of view, how can fintech brands elevate themselves and their brands through design?
Gosh, how long have I got? I mean, first of all, 18 years makes me sound very, very old, but there we go. There's a host of areas that fintech companies can elevate their brand through design. And I've been trying to think of situations that are unique to this sector, but in reality, the areas are fairly similar for a load of different types of businesses, both across B2B and B2C. Although I guess some of them are more pertinent to the fintech sector. The biggest one for me, I think I'll start off with something which may seem like a catch-all for all businesses, but it's probably the most important one for me, and that is that design, and by that I mean good design, kind of well-considered design, can really help you demonstrate your point of difference. It will help you stand out from the competition and make you recognizable and memorable. And this is key for everyone, but I guess it's specifically important for fast-moving sectors where new brands, new disruptive brands are emerging all the time. So, you know, I guess that's really relevant for the fintech sector.
Yeah, I think so. We've already had a couple of chats with our guests already on this subject. Our other two guests, Michael and Aaron, we talked about this, the fact that you can look at fintech in isolation to a certain extent. It's very fast moving. It's seen as a kind of challenger industry, I suppose, or sub-industry of the financial world, trying to go up against some fairly big institutions that are fairly kind of established. But ultimately, it's like any market or any sector in the sense that, you know, you still need to stand out and make an impression in order to get a foothold and in order to essentially build your brand. You talked about that. Companies need to do that. How do you actually do that in practice from your point of view?
Do you know, we spend most of our time talking with clients and with peers, you know, talking about how they can stand out and have that point of difference. But I think, you know, the main point of difference is that you have to come across as being authentic, you know, and that your messaging and your story has to be authentic. And so for me, a big priority with this journey is that the founders are behind the brand and the founders are behind what you're doing with the brand. If they are excited about the whole journey, then it gives you three tools to work with. First of all, you're going to have access to the people in your company who are best placed to tell your brand story and understand, you know, your particular point of difference or your particular uniqueness. The second thing, you get that insight, but secondly, if they're excited to be on the brand journey, you're more likely to get their ongoing input into brand activity. So I remember when Zip rebranded, you know, a couple of years ago, Larry Diamond, their CEO, was super, super active in the launch of the brand and the rollout of the brand. And that had a real impact from kind of me looking at the brand from the outside and seeing how it evolved after the rebrand. And finally, if you have, you know, the founders on board with this idea of investing in creativity for the good of building of bettering your company, then you're going to get that long-term commitment to invest in quality brand activity. And, you know, that's what you need to be a success and start to realize your ambition. So the main thing for me is that design can massively help you get your points different across. That's the main thing design can do for you. And that's a load easier if you've got founders and senior team who recognize the power of design.
But I do think that's a really, really interesting point, because if you look at the reason why a lot of fintech founders set up their businesses, as I said before, you know, the chances are it probably is to disrupt quite a staid and traditional industry in terms of the finance industry. And I probably am generalizing a little bit there, but I think that is true for quite a lot of fintech businesses. So they are natural disruptors. And I think that when you start to put brand into that category of areas that you need to disrupt within, I think that you're naturally going to find within fintech companies, founders and leaders who are more inclined to go along on that journey. Are there any fintech companies in particular that you think are nailing that at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, there are loads. I mean, there are so many strong brands within fintech and brands who are kind of elevating that brand through really strong visual language. You know, I know that a couple of them are contributing to this podcast, but I've been a big fan of Klarna, you know, recently. Pretty in Pink, you know, great design, really strong messaging, and that incredible influencer marketing strategy that just kind of makes you smile and ticks all those boxes about standing out from the crowd, having your own personality, being memorable, wanting people to share the content you have. So yeah, for me, Klarna are nailing it at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, big fan of Klarna. I quite like some of the, like Robinhood, some of those kind of retail investing apps and brands as well, that have to really distinguish themselves, not just from a brand point of view, but from a product and a user experience, a UX point of view. It becomes really important when you're engaging with, actually, you know, I suppose most fintech brands are elite to a certain extent, but certainly those ones. And actually, speaking of that, so just wanted to move on. When we talk about design, we've lent towards the brand side of things, that kind of overarching brand look and feel that design touches so well. But, you know, as I mentioned just there, you know, there are lots of other areas that design has to play a massive role in terms of engagement with audiences. What other areas like that do you think that fintech companies can benefit from really impactful and great design?
Yeah, I mean, again, there are a lot more, and these aren't unique to fintech, but I feel that they're certainly relevant. And I think one area that is really relevant in fintech, we talk about disruptive brands within this industry, but actually, you have to build trust within the sector in order to be recognized and to flourish. So I feel that establishing and building trust is another key area where really good design can have an impact. You know, you need to have that well-considered design language that makes you look established, and that is fundamental. You know, most companies, these disruptive companies, they'll go from that journey from being this kind of mad scientist startup scale phase where they're kind of building the product and building the platforms, but then eventually you have to come across as an established, trusted solution for people to have the faith to use your products and services. So how you portray yourself externally through your design can really help to speed up that process and build up trust, that process and that journey from startup scale up to being a more kind of, you know, established, trustworthy brand.
Yeah, definitely. And just to your mind, is there anyone in your view that is doing that side of things particularly well?
Yeah, I think so. I think loads of people do it so well. But I think sometimes when you're building this trust stuff, then it's not so much about the bells and the whistles. It's about kind of consistency. I think that Coinbase do this pretty well. Their visual language and their messaging really emphasizes security and trust. They have super clear messaging around the security measures that they're delivered, and they're delivered in a kind of clean, crisp, no-nonsense way. And for me, that approach really helps to build confidence with their users and their potential users.
Yeah, definitely. Big fan of Coinbase. Still look back on that Super Bowl ad so fondly. I just think when you're talking about disruption and creativity, you know, it ticks all of those boxes such an irreverent way.
But some of it is beautifully understated, and I think that's a nice way to build trust. It's that you have utter confidence when you look at their website or you read some of their messaging or you're looking at their app. It's like, okay, I get these guys. I trust them.
Yeah, which is quite a big thing in that whole world. But yeah, cryptocurrency really, really could do with that element of trust for sure. And I agree. Yeah, Coinbase do it very, very well. Any other areas in particular that you think design has an opportunity to help and elevate?
Yeah, kind of another thought I thought was interesting was this idea of helping to build a sense of community. So it's not just in maybe the messaging and the look of the brand, but really applying real consideration to intuitive design across their platforms and their apps. So kind of make it easy for users to navigate and perform financial transactions. So kind of like, you know, I really like what Revolut are doing here. You know, their brand ethos is built on innovation and financial inclusion, you know, aiming to bring financial services to a global audience, bring financial services to the masses. And this really comes through with the way that their design comes across visually. And then I guess, you know, finally, another way that area I really like is where companies are using creative thinking and great design and using that in unexpected ways. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, of maybe gamification here. You know, fintech apps are increasingly using gamification to enhance customer motivation and engagement. You know, it's a sector which is still experiencing massive growth, and so standing out becomes crucial. And this gamification, incorporating game-like elements into non-game contexts, is a real effective strategy for fintech companies.
Yeah, definitely. I think you have to be a little bit careful sometimes with gamification. I think that there are certain pros and cons. You know, the pros are that it can really help in areas like saving. So if you bring a kind of game-like experience to the concept of saving money, it can really help people to not just understand a little bit more about it, but actually do it really, really well and actually commit to that process, which I think is great. But by the same token, and I'm not necessarily saying I disagree with this, by the way, but you know, the way that I mentioned Robin Hood earlier, but the way that brands like that kind of bring an element of gamification into investing can trivialize it, I think, in some ways and for some people, and make it seem there's a serious nature to investing, as you know. You know, you can, you know, worst case scenario, you can lose your money. But, you know, by bringing gamification into that, is that a good thing or not? I don't know. So who do you feel is doing that side of things?
It's interesting that you say that, you know, because, you know, the whole thing about gamification, you know, if you look at online gambling, whatever it is, you know, it can drive behavioural change, and that can be for good and for bad. And you know, we have to be very, very careful, obviously, using what people might perceive as gimmicks to you know, for such important areas as financial services. But, you know, you talk about Robin Hood. I think that somebody who is using gamification really, really well for good is Fortune City. They've nailed this. You know, their whole platform is based on gamification. You know, that unique approach to expense tracking and budgeting. It's an awesome use of how gamification can really help people to manage their finances better. And it's been massively successful for them. I just checked before the podcast, and, you know, they've had over 5 million downloads on the App Store. It really is a successful use of gamification in this sector.
I just wondered if we could just finish off by talking a little bit about design and gamification, because obviously I know a lot about the tactic of gamification itself in terms of what it's intending to encourage people to do. But do you have any thoughts on the role that good design plays in that whole process? You know, whether it's animation, whether it's characters, as in kind of Duolingo. What are your thoughts on that?
Good design is only ever the answer of a really strong brief. So I feel that, you know, any design in gamification, any design of a website, any design of an app, you know, we have to start off with a real strong understanding of what that app is there to achieve, what their audiences are, what their audience pains are, and take those and then fit a design that helps to solve that creative brief. You know, so whether that is at a particular age group or at a particular social standing or solving particular problems, you know, you can't, I think you have to be very, very careful that you don't trivialize what are potentially really, really important things. We spoke previously about, you know, investing, and there are real risks to investment. Gauging people's appetite for taking those risks with investment is massively, massively important. And so you have to make sure that anything that you do within your apps and within your website, which is there to gamify these things, aren't trivializing what are very, very important circumstances from people. So I say that's, you know, have a really strong brief, which is backed up by a real strong understanding and a really strong strategy. And with, if you have those parameters, then you know, if you stick to that brief, then the designs can't be wrong. Obviously, there's a whole level of subjectivity where people have opinions about what you're doing. But start with the brief, start with the strategy, and have the design fit that. And whether that is animation, film, games, characters, you know, whatever it may be, that's then part of that creative process and part of that design process to bring that brief and strategy to life.
Absolutely. A great point to end on. All right, thanks a lot, Nick.
So there we go. That was Nick's thoughts there. And again, speaking of themes that are running through these conversations, the bit that I really picked up on was when he was talking about founders. I think this is so pertinent to technology businesses, both inside fintech and outside. You can almost, I know it's a bit more nuanced than this, but you can almost draw a line between two separate camps of technology businesses. Does founders that believe in brand and marketing and founders that don't so much believe in brand and marketing. And ultimately, you know, the more creative, the more imaginative, the more distinctive, and to a certain extent, the more successful technology companies, for the most part, have founders who may not be experts in brand and marketing, but fundamentally believe that these things are so important that they need to hire the best people and let those people get on with the job of building that brand and building that marketing out. And I think that the way that Aaron talked about himself reporting to the CEO and the fact that the CEO buys into that vision 100% is a massive part of why Ramp are where they are today and why they're doing so well, especially from a brand point of view. So I think that's a great sentiment to end with as much as anything. So listen, I really, really thank you for your time. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our three guests, to Aaron, to Michael and to Nick. There's a YouTube link in the show notes for this podcast. It's also on our website as well, shaped-by.com. So you'll be able to go and watch the videos of this if you want to see just how much my beard pales into comparison to Michael's and also check out the episodes again if you can. But yeah, mainly beard stuff. So yeah, do go and check those out. Stay tuned and we'll be back with you very soon. Thanks for listening to The Changemakers.